Mr. Lukey, you certainly know how to empty a room. Everyone just left.
I thought they were here for us, Your Honor.
We're here for you.
May it please the court, Stephen R. Lukey for Fortuna Enterprises, LP. We would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, and we will rest on the pleadings with the exception of one key issue in this case, and that's the employee occupation of the hotel on May 11, 2006. The appropriate standard of review by this court is that it must uphold the board's order in this matter unless the findings by the board are not supported by substantial evidence. They're not. Or if the board failed to apply the proper legal standard or departed from established precedent without a reasonable justification, it had none. In our view, this case is controlled by Northeast Beverage, a case decided by this court, Judge Ginsburg, Judge Henderson, in 2009. That case was ignored by the board when it decided the case in this matter in August of 2010. In addition, in our view, the board completely misapplied prior precedent set forth in Quiet Flex Manufacturing Company, which we've discussed, both sides, at length in our briefing. The Quiet Flex case set out 10 factors in order to determine whether an employee work stoppage is protected by the National Labor Relations Act. In our view, the proper analysis of only the first Quiet Flex factor is dispositive here. The first
Quiet... No court has yet endorsed that litany of factors, have they?
That's correct, Your Honor. But that is board precedent. The first Quiet Flex factor...
Is it analytical or just descriptive?
It's analytical. And descriptive, actually. Not necessarily that the petitioner agrees with it. Yeah. But the first Quiet Flex factor is why the employee is engaged in a work stoppage. And the question presented by that is, does the reason employees stop working constitute a labor dispute? Labor dispute is defined at Section 2.9 of the National Labor Relations Act and is discussed at length by this court in Northeast Beverage. The facts in this case, Fortuna Enterprises owns the Los Angeles Airport Hilton Hotel. It's 1,234 rooms. On May 9th and 10th of 2006, the hotel enjoyed 100% occupancy. All rooms were filled. On May 10th of 2006, hotel employee, he worked in the hotel's restaurant. Hotel employee Sergio Reyes was caught stealing and was suspended pending investigation as a result. Suspensions pending investigation are consistent with hotel policy. Excuse me, at that time, no final disciplinary action had been issued to Mr. Reyes. Mr. Reyes informed two fellow employees and union organizers, Patricia Simmons and Miguel Vargas, that he had been suspended for stealing as a result of a spotters or mystery shoppers report, and that the matter involved a guest check. As a result, Simmons and Vargas began organizing the employee occupation of the hotel cafeteria, the employee cafeteria, which took place the following morning. In organizing the cafeteria occupation, Vargas and Simmons admittedly told other employees that Reyes had been accused of stealing. They allegedly thought that Reyes' suspension pending investigation may actually have been for, or allegedly have been for, his union activities.
Can I just interrupt and ask, there's nothing in the record, is there, that Samayoya, Oyo, or whatever,
Samayoya,
somebody else said to them, if you'll just go back to your jobs, somebody will talk to you. Somebody, isn't that the real problem here, and the difference between this and Northeastern and other work stoppages is, among these factors, one of the most important, at least that we've isolated, is if the management says, if you'll stop the work stoppage, we'll listen to your complaints or we'll tell you what's going on. And all the times that she said to them, go back or you'll be suspended, go back, go home or whatever, that she never said that management would talk to them when whatever his name was came back, or when Cook, I don't know where Cook was, but Cook didn't appear either. In other words, the picture that's painted is these people stayed there because nobody would tell them, we'll answer your questions, we'll tell you what's going on if you'll just go back to work.
There was a problem, Your Honor, actually three problems. Number one, Hotel General Manager Grant Coonley was off property that morning and not available. Coonley had actually met with an employee delegation in January of 2006 and told them at that time that their workplace concerns would be addressed by him if they made an appointment. Problem number two.
Well, that was what, 4 months before, 5 months before?
Yes, this was an ongoing union organizing drive that involved, I think, 11 separate employee delegation grievances. In any event, Food and Beverage Director Thomas Cook was actually serving guests and bussing tables in the hotel's restaurant because virtually all of his employees had walked off the job and were in the cafeteria. Perhaps third and most importantly, they wanted to discuss the Sergio Reyes suspension with management, and hotel policy, published hotel policy, forbade that. Personnel actions are confidential.
And did you tell them that?
No, she didn't, but it's published in the employee handbook received by all employees. It's a confidential personnel matter that couldn't be discussed with employees.
How hard would that have been to tell them that?
I would think, Your Honor, that it would be assumed by employees. You have employees who know that a co-employee is suspended for theft. I think it goes without saying that if you steal in a hotel, you're going to be disciplined.
Was this argued? Was that point argued in the before the ALJ?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is the ALJ's response to that?
The ALJ's decision is in the appendix, Your Honor. Although I can't cite to where in the record it was.
Did the ALJ respond to that point?
I believe so. Yes.
But you don't know where.
No, sir.
I thought the ALJ's point was that, you had this established grievance procedure or a procedure, but it only applied to individual complaints, not group complaints.
There are 11 references in the appendix to hotel resolution of group complaints.
Well, I understand that, but I thought that was the ALJ's point at the top of page 992.
The ALJ's point being that the hotel didn't respond to group complaints? It did, on numerous occasions.
You're into your
the ALJ, on whatever factor it is under this case, said that, well, I'm not going to take into account whether there was an established grievance procedure, because there wasn't. Although you had a written policy, the policy only applied to addressed only individual complaints, not group grievances like the one presented in the instant case. And that was the reason why the ALJ discounted, ignored, threw out this quiet flex number 4 and 7.
The ALJ was simply wrong, Your Honor.
Yeah, I understand the point but I'm trying to find out why, where the ALJ address this other point. You say, well, it wasn't even subject to, it's a different point. You're saying that this particular complaint, group complaint, wasn't even subject to our written policy, open door policy.
The handbook.
I mean, that sort of undercuts your argument, but where is it that that's being said?
I believe, Your Honor, first of all, the hotel's employee handbook was submitted as an exhibit in the underlying trial before the ALJ. It was Respondent's Exhibit 28. The references to confidentiality of personnel records, I think there are three separate references in that handbook to the confidentiality of personnel records.
Let me see if I can frame this up.
Okay.
On the one hand, the ALJ responded, and I think I saw an argument in your brief, that there was an established procedure for individuals and groups to have their grievances, their complaints, heard by management. And that was contained in the employee handbook, the open door policy, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. On the other hand, you're saying to us now that there was no opportunity, there would be no opportunity for any employee that was in that cafeteria to air their grievance about this particular matter because that was outside of the open door policy.
That's correct. There are a number of issues which could be forbidden as topic of discussion between management and employees. Theft is one of them. Personnel actions are another. Pending discipline is another.
You don't know where the ALJ responded to that?
No, Your Honor. I'd also point out that in Northeast Beverage, which we do think is dispositive, that this court specifically noted that employees' desires there, even though a legitimate labor dispute over job security issues, were not protected because employees in the case only wanted to discuss their concerns with management at a time when they were supposedly on the clock and had left work. And I'm going to quote the court, that the drivers were particularly anxious to get answers and wanted to ask their questions directly, does not distinguish this case from others in which employees left their jobs during working time to seek information that just as well could have been obtained from the union during non-working hours. Accordingly, the employees leaving work was justified neither by connection to an ongoing labor dispute, like here, with their employer, nor by a compelling necessity to attend the bargaining session that day. The employees simply used working time to engage in union-related activity customarily reserved for non-working time. Section 7 and the relevant cases thereunder do not protect employees who leave work to seek information from their union or their employer, indistinguishable in our view from the instant matter. This is a situation or an incident that should not have been conducted on work time, should not have interfered with employer operations, and should not have resulted in the hostile takeover of the employee cafeteria by a group of 77 employees.
Okay, I found what the ALJ. The ALJ said, look, it doesn't matter if it's the employee's or employer's policy, privacy policy, that they would not discuss a personnel matter like this. What does matter is whether the employees were given an opportunity to present their grievance.
Present their views, Your Honor. They never articulated the reason that they were in the cafeteria that morning for 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Any further? Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Lukey.
Thank you.
Can I bend this without breaking it? May it please the court, my name is Kira Dellinger-Wohl, and I represent the National Labor Relations Board in this matter.
Speak a little louder, please.
Pardon me.
Push that closer to you, maybe that'll...
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay, apologize. I think it's important in this case to keep in mind the events at the hotel that were happening during the contested violations, which my opposing counsel referenced. The employees were conducting a campaign for union representation, and the employer of the hotel, in opposing that campaign, committed a large number of unfair labor practices, including threats, interrogation, and physical intimidation. Those unfair labor practices were adjudicated by the board, and the hotel doesn't contest most of them in this case. But I think they are instructive as a context for the violations that we are discussing. And in particular, on the issue of the Northeast Beverage labor dispute question about whether this was protected activity or protected subject, as an initial matter, protesting the discharge or discipline of a co-employee, even the lawful discipline of a co-employee, is protected. But in addition,
they bring that home to the management, what their purpose was in gathering in the cafeteria?
The board found that the employees made clear within, I think, less than a half hour, I think about 15 minutes of first starting their protest or their stoppage, that they wanted to talk to either Coonley or Cook about Sergio Reyes's suspension. They did not articulate their specific concerns with respect to it in terms of union retaliation. They did not ask for a specific remedy, for example, at that time, but that's not required in general for protected activity, but particularly in a case like this one, where the employees are not represented, not necessarily sophisticated. The fact of all the employees gathering together to conduct a work stoppage and conveying that they wanted to talk to management about a discipline of a co-employee was conveyed and does satisfy the protected question, the labor dispute. They had a dispute over, you know, their sense that the hotel was engaging in retaliation for union activities. And I do want to clarify, because I noticed in the reply brief that the hotel said that we had not cited any testimony that the employees were not only concerned that Reyes's union activities were a motivating factor in his suspension, but they were also concerned that, therefore, they could similarly be subject to retaliation. I mean, first of all, I think is a logical, just a logical common sense matter. If I'm engaged in union activities, as is my coworker, and I believe that he's been disciplined for them, I might have that same fear. But in fact, there are at least two places in the record where I believe Simmons and Vargas, the employees who helped organize the delegation, discussed that they were specifically worried about not only that Reyes's discipline was retaliation, but that there could be more retaliation in the future against other employees involved in the campaign, and that they had discussed this with other employees.
Let me turn to another subject then. Is the videotape in the record?
I believe it is.
I don't know whether was it presented to this court. I haven't seen it.
It's not in the joint appendix. My recollection of how we litigate before this court is that we submit a certified list of the record. I don't think you have the entire record before you, although.
Tell me how it is that someone disappearing from camera range and then returning later, not just immediately later, but a while later, into camera range, is evidence that he or she went into the ballroom.
Well, Your
Honor, is that the only place that one could go in that direction out of camera range? So that, you know, if it's the end of a hallway or something?
Well, Your Honor, the board found that they did not enter the ballroom. So my position would be that you can't make that inference legitimate.
I'm sorry, that they did not enter the ballroom?
They did not enter the ballroom. I should clarify, because there were five different employees.
Right, two of them spoke
in
the ballroom.
Two of them clearly, right.
Okay.
They entered
the
ballroom.
I thought the relevance of the videotape evidence for the board was that from that it could infer that the others who are working in the vicinity had entered the ballroom.
I believe that is the hotel's argument. If I'm sorry to look down, but I think I can find in the ALJD, for Your Honor, I think I can find the board's analysis of that, which my recollection is that the board found they did not, in fact, enter, and which is far from the sole reason, but one reason the board found the warnings problematic was because...
Oh, go ahead. Yes, I'm sorry.
Pardon me. I
think it was the AL, I mean, yeah, that the ALJ who said they didn't enter the ballroom. I guess the board didn't actually reach this. Is that right?
Well, the board found, you know, adopted that violation, and the board in a footnote, excuse me, I'm sorry, used this policy, in other words, and I'm sorry, I'm on the first page of the board decision, footnote 5.
What page of the JA is that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Wait a minute, I think I've got it. I mean, 990 something.
I'm so accustomed to working with my copy that I brought that one. I apologize for that.
All right, which board decision is this?
Now, it's the April 30th, 2009 decision, which was initially a two-member decision, and then in the later decision, the three-member board adopted and incorporated the decision, and Member Hayes joined Member Schomburg's footnote 5, which making it the majority opinion of the board, and stated that the two members of the board agreed with the judge's finding that the respondent disparately applied its new use of location policy to the employees and used this policy as a pretext to discipline known union supporters who did not even violate the rule. So I guess because it references, now that I reread it, because it references the new policy, it is possible that that footnote only discusses Simmons and Brentner, who we know went in the room, but
right,
were not in violation because they were
invited
under the new policy. But I believe that the board also adopts the ALJ decision, and in that decision there's a footnote which I was having trouble putting my finger on, in which the judge finds that Gomez, McGowan, and Salinas did not enter the ballroom. I don't know that it would be entirely fatal if they had, you know, put one foot over the threshold, but the finding was, you know, that they were essentially assigned specifically to work in the area right around the ballroom doors.
Right.
Apparently, I mean, I've never been to the hotel, but apparently the camera doesn't show exactly right where the doors are, but near it. So it's possible to see that they went near the door and then they stayed, did
away,
something in there, and then came back. And the board found they did, you know, the work that they were assigned to be doing right there, because I guess there's trash cans were right at the doors, were even, there's some testimony, were even propping open the door. I mean, did the cart cross the threshold when they emptied the, you know, I'm not sure, but I believe the board's finding is they did not enter the ballroom. And
can I direct you to, I'd like to direct you to JA 992. This is a portion of the ALJ opinion that I mentioned to counsel for the employer. Do you have it in front of you?
I did not bring that portion of my appendix, but I have the
You didn't bring the ALJ's opinion with you?
I did. I have it right here, page 10.
Page 11.
Page 11. Thank you.
Okay, at the top right-hand corner. It says, respondent also presented anecdotal examples of individual employees bringing their individual concerns concerning equipment to their supervisor's attention for resolution. However, the board found a similar open door policy addressed only individual complaints, not group grievances. Right? The fact of the matter is that there was ample evidence in the record indicating that the sorts of complaints that the management put forth before the ALJ were group grievances. And the ALJ has never addressed that, did not address that evidence at all. Just said, well, in this other case, we said it was only individual, and so this doesn't count, but never dealt with the evidence. What's your answer for that?
Well, I think there are a couple answers, Your Honor. I think, first of all, that legally, I think that the ALJ more focused on the legal implications of this sort of open door policy under the quiet flex standard, which I do discuss in my brief. I think with respect to the complaints that you reference in the record, there were examples. One example I recall is there were two bartenders, for example, who complained that a stool had been removed. There were some multiple, I don't know if it was two or three housekeepers who complained about, I can't remember the details, but some of their equipment either being too heavy or the type of, you know, equipment they were supposed to be used. I think that sort of group complaint, it can be called a group complaint.
About what kind of clothing the attendants had to wear, and then the whole kitchen staff complained about the pots and pans. These were all group grievances. And then you perpetuate this mistake in your brief. I mean, you adopt the individual versus group dichotomy, but I don't know where this comes from. The ALJ doesn't cite anything in the transcript, and in fact, it's hard to read that paragraph as even making a finding on the point. It's just saying, well, in this other case, we did this. What about this case?
Again, I think that the ALJ's analysis more goes to his interpretation of the HMY, the policy itself being similar to the policy here, and I also discussed Firestone and Canberra, which I think are relevant on the legal point about the open door policy. I don't think that he discusses the specific grievances in that context, as you point out, but I believe that they're distinguishable. They are group in the sense that there was more than one employee who complained at that time.
Let's suppose he's just wrong on this. Suppose he's factually absolutely incorrect. Do we send the case back, or we refuse to enforce because of that?
Well, I think there. First of all, I don't think he's completely wrong, because I'd like.
No, but don't tamper with my hype.
Okay. Yes, sir. Excuse me, Your Honor.
Suppose he
if the ALJ were to, and the board have incorrectly analyzed the effect of the open door policy. You know, under quiet flex, the board balances all of the factors. I think that in Firestone, the board did take the time to point out that, you know, the grievance issue is not necessarily a dispositive factor. None of the factors are necessarily dispositive. I think, as Judge Henderson pointed out, some factors like the principle of employees being able to have some audience either right then or, you know, in a reasonable future, proximate future time is a very important factor. I do not think that disagreeing with the board on the open door policy would justify a denial of enforcement. I think that given the extensive analysis the board did on the other factors,
In fact, as you're speaking, it seems to me I recall that in this very dispute, there's an example of a group airing a grievance to Cook. Didn't the employees together go to Cook toward the end of this whole business and say and complain that they that please let us go back to work?
During the cafeteria delegation, which is I think what the parties called this, there was a period of time, you know, after they had been asking to talk to Cook or Coonley, and Samayoa had just sort of been saying go home or go to work. Then she started suspending them pending investigation. And then they approached De La Rosa, who was a different supervisor, and said, they had sort of gotten the message that there was going to be no audience. And they said, we'd like to go back to work. Can you please tell someone we'd like to go back to work?
I thought it was Cook they approached.
I'm getting to that, Your Honor. De La Rosa was in the cafeteria. And, you know, they walked up to him
The point is that even during this particular incident, there was a group complaint, grievance, that was presented to Cook, and he rejected it, but it was presented.
If I may, I think that that's not a totally accurate characterization of what happened. I think that after trying to get an audience, they were stonewalled, and after even trying to go back to work, they got no response. The group of employees in the cafeteria put together a smaller committee or delegation to send them to the restaurant to try to find Cook themselves, because he wasn't coming per their request to the cafeteria, which is where they understood they should gather. if they weren't working. And that group went to the cafe and I think may have perceived Cook through a door, but actually was not allowed to go talk to him, asked another supervisory or management type person who was there if they could go tell Cook that the employees now wanted to return to work. And they never spoke to Cook, but it was conveyed to them by that person, by Samayoa, who came up from the cafeteria, by a number of management officials, no, you have been suspended, you cannot work. And at that point, this committee returned in the company of some managers to the cafeteria
and
said—
isn't that evidence that the employees themselves, even in this particular incident, knew that they could, as a group, have a grievance presented to management? They might not get like the result, but that's always the case in labor management negotiations.
Well,
they did it. I mean, there's no better evidence.
But respectfully, I think that they tried very hard to do it. I don't think they ever were given an audience, number one, on their actual grievance regarding Sergio Reyes's suspension. Also, the effort to go back to work that you reference was A, unsuccessful, not heard in any respect. All that was repeated to them was that they'd in fact already been subject to the discipline that's the subject of this unfair labor practice. And there are other examples that I cite in my brief where a group of employees, Director Burkhart and the, I don't know if he's director, but the head of the front office operations, apparently on another occasion, a number of employees not only approached him as a group, but specifically cited the open door policy to him and said, you've told us about this open door policy, we want to talk to you pursuant to this open door policy. And he wouldn't talk to them. I'm not working, I'm not available, you can't talk to me, get back to work. So, I mean, number one, during the cafeteria delegation, at no point did anyone, including Samayoa, say to them, hey, we have an open door policy and you need to follow it. I mean, nor has the hotel really suggested what else why, in a sense, this wouldn't have been, going. They were on break when they initially showed up in the cafeteria and asked to speak to a manager. But, obviously their breaks expired, et cetera, while they were waiting for someone to either talk to them or tell them that, there would be another opportunity.
Is there any evidence that this delegation that was in the cafeteria was told how disruptive their occupation was? In other words, did Samaloya or whatever say, look, Cook can't talk to you because he's serving breakfast, or so-and-so can't talk to you because she's cleaning rooms? I mean, were they told how disruptive this was to the functioning of the hotel?
The quick answer is no. There's no evidence they were told that. I also would take some, I might slightly disagree with some of the characterization of the disruption. I mean, of the hotel rooms, for example, Samayoa herself was in the cafeteria. No one was cleaning the hotel rooms in their place until after the delegation, after they had offered to return to work and,
right,
were,
and then they were suspended,
told to leave. I mean, in fact, there was no reference to, well, Cook can't talk to you because he's trying to do your job right now.
Okay.
Ms. Ball, I misspoke earlier. It was the employer that jumped to the conclusion, and I'm sorry for the confusion.
No problem.
The ALJ found, as you said, the three did not, or there was not sufficient evidence that the three entered the ballroom, and went on to say that an adequate investigation would have made that apparent to the, or at least revealed their claim to that effect by the employees. But the board didn't adopt the inadequacy of the investigation as a ground,
right,
for its decision.
The board did not rely on the,
on
the,
right,
investigation.
Now, but for the, just to return to this subject with a clean slate, in order for the finding, for the conclusion here to be upheld, for the discipline relating to the claim of a discrimination in the discipline, anti-union animus in the discipline,
the facilities use warnings.
The, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, I just wanted
to make
sure I was on the same.
All right, so the board has to identify some specific union activity, right, of which the employer was aware, and the basis of its retaliation or discrimination.
Right, the board has.
Okay, so but the ALJ said there's no evidence that Fortuna had knowledge that the five in question here were engaged in any union activity on June 3rd.
Right.
Okay. And also found that their May 11th activity, which we've been discussing, was protected. Okay. And that played no role
in the
discipline.
Right.
So what was it that the employer was aware of?
Well, I think what the ALJ and what the board found is that, well, first of all, they didn't find it, that the employer stipulated that it was aware that each of these five employees was participating in union activity during this ongoing. Again, as I started with the idea of this context, because I think it does really, taking these two violations sort of completely out of context, we lose sight of the fact that the employees were acting and the employer was acting in an atmosphere where we have an ongoing campaign. The employees are not just on, you know, May 11th or at the CTA conference or at any one time, but repeatedly, you know, there was some picketing. There were, I think my co-counsel said 11
delegations. So it's
just that they're
union adherents, I guess.
They were union adherents, and they had been participating over this period of time in union activity.
Weren't they asked to speak about the May 11th disruption in June?
And again, I should separate because there were really two different types of warnings here. But the Brentner and Simmons actually did. Simmons, I believe, was asked by the CTA, which is not the union in this case, but is a union, to speak about, you know, her experience of the delegation and the suspension and her coworkers
and her
family.
But again, there's no indication that the employer was aware of that.
Right, and the board doesn't. That's what they were doing,
Can't rely on the June 3rd activity. Can't rely on the May 11th activity. Just the general awareness that somehow, to which they stipulated, they knew these people were union adherents.
I think that there were two affirmative facts. There was the stipulation that Your Honor references, and then there was also the fact that they knew that the activity going in the ballroom was a union activity, not the employees' union, but a union activity. So because there is evidence in the record that employees attended all sorts of other, you know, the Emerald Ball dance and some sort of religious, spiritual Amma. And so, I mean, you know, so, but this activity where they got warned for going in the room was, in fact, a union activity. But the
finding was that the employer wasn't aware of the June 3rd activity. Isn't that right, Fundby?
The finding, I believe, is that the employer wasn't aware that the employees undertook any, for example, the speeches that you referenced.
Quoting now, there's no evidence Fortuna had knowledge the five employees, all five, engaged in protected, concerted, or union activity on June 3rd.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what the subject of the meeting was.
June 3rd's off the table. But the activity of the five employees on June 3rd. But I'm saying the room that they so did not want these employees to enter, they knew that was a union gathering. But I think that the board also relied, you know, it doesn't rely simply in finding that union activity was a motivating factor in these warnings. It does not simply rely on the stipulation. I mean, the stipulation is, if you will, the sort of this affirmative piece of evidence that the employer was clearly aware of these employees' union activities. But essentially, the board relies in great part on sort of the pretext of the reasons given and the disparate application of these.
Yes, it seems to me that that's really
that's the meat of all that there is. Yeah, and there are, in the case law, suggests that if an employer gives a pretextual reason and applies disparately,
insofar as people are disciplined for attending the CTA event, there are the other events, there's this dispute, right? Then the union says, well, members have been invited, employees have been invited to other matters, no discipline. Right? The employer comes back and says, well, that's because it was all prearranged by agreement.
Right. The employer suggests that all of the other occasions when employees attended, and apparently there were multiple occasions, different events, that those are all distinguishable because right. those organizations had some sort of, I guess, contract yeah. with
And there's the testimony company. From two people on that score.
But there's, first of all, nothing in the hotel's facility use policy that would require that, and particularly for Simmons and Brent.
They didn't say it's required. They said that it happened to be there. Right.
Right.
In those instances, they had there wasn't discipline because the hotel had agreed with the client that they could invite employees.
And this is what the hotel says. However, first, you know, it's not required under the policy, but also there's not necessarily, you know, it does not appear that every employee who went was aware that there was this behind the scenes agreement regarding attendance.
No, that's not the question. The question is, why did the employer punish these employees and not those employees? And its answer is, we'd given consent for those employees, so we couldn't discipline them. They
right.
didn't violate anything.
These employees were also, again, speaking of the two who actually went in, were also invited.
Yeah, it's them, yes, it's the other three, I suppose. That,
right, and then, of course, with respect to those two employees as well, the hotel had actually changed its policy to this new policy, not requiring permission. I mean, before, permission had been required, so.
I'm looking just at the claim that there was disparate discipline here.
Right.
Against union people of whom the employer knew there was union activity.
Right. And I think,
as opposed to the historical record.
Right.
At one point, the board looks at the historical record of employees attending things. That's explained away. And another point, it looks at the where there was discipline
right.
and
okay.
says, well, look at the offense. Right. Was there any instance of more serious conduct going undisciplined or less serious more serious conduct going undisciplined?
Yeah, there's the instance of the bathrooms in the lobby, which, again, I believe in the reply brief, the hotel suggests that those bathrooms were somehow not off limits, but the testimony of the HR director, I think that the language of the policy in the first place, but also the testimony of the HR director indicates that those bathrooms were, in fact, not for employee use.
I think that's pretty adequately in the record. But there's also the observation that they don't have cameras, so they couldn't identify who went into the bathrooms.
Right. Well, we do return to the fact that there were also no cameras on the ballroom doors, so we don't actually know who went in the ballroom. But, you know, I would argue. But also, but the HR director also testified that, I mean, yes, there were no cameras. It's true she couldn't just go look at them, but that she never considered it a disciplinary matter or wanted to investigate. I mean, presumably, if there are, you know, there may not be a camera, but the hotel is, I mean, I'm speculating, but perfectly capable of conducting some other sort
so
of investigation.
So they did say they didn't consider it warranted, that it warranted an investigation?
She did not consider it an investigation situation. She resolved what she saw as the problem, because this created extra work.
Do you have a quick reference on that?
I believe it's 518 and 19, I think, when she testifies. And I believe it's the continuation of that testimony. I may have to provide it to you in a separate memo, but I believe where she testifies that there were no cameras, she also answers in the following conversation that she essentially didn't consider it.
All right, at 519, I guess it is, yeah. I don't believe we have cameras in that area. Is that why you didn't ask her to get camera images? Did you actually investigate at the time it was told you whether there were in fact camera images? I didn't investigate whether there were camera images there, but to my knowledge in the past from looking at the room, there. So I seem to think this is all about whether there were cameras.
And I believe I could be right.
I'm on 520 now.
I could be remembering this incorrectly, but my recollection is that.
Ah, so you didn't think of it as an investigative matter, isn't it fair to say? No, I didn't.
Okay. So I think that either there or elsewhere, she, It's actually discussed in the sort of open door discussion, and I think her point was, I resolved this complaint by locking the doors. But I think the board's point is that may be true, but here's an unauthorized use of facilities that's creating extra work, that's generating complaints by other employees, and essentially the hotel did not even consider that an investigatory matter. I mean, setting aside the logistics of whether there happens to be a camera on, you know, the bathroom door.
Okay, anything else? Questions? Thank you, Ms. Ball.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lukey, want to see if there are questions here for you? No questions, take 1 minute.
One point I would like to make, Your Honor, that I had, I believe, said earlier. On May 11th.
It's rebuttal, not repetition.
No, it is rebuttal said. Okay. From what Ms. Vall had to say. On May 11th of 2006, there is no evidence in the record that employees ever articulated the reason that they wanted to speak with General Manager Coonley or Food and Beverage Director Thomas Cook at any time at all during the morning. No evidence.
Never said why they wanted to talk.
Correct.
Okay.
If there are no questions from the court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. The case is submitted.